Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. First on the docket, Chad DeBell's attorney makes his written argument to the court for a change of venue. Frankly, I was a little disappointed. Second, this guy may be a serial killer if he did what he is accused of doing. And then we have a cop begs a driver to cooperate. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. First, want to thank everyone for all the nice comments about me being so casual over the last couple days as we were flying across the country, breaking in the new engine for Crime Talk 1. I can tell you that Crime Talk 1 is tucked away in her hangar that is being heated to approximately 70 degrees to make sure that she stays nice and warm and ready to go at a moment's notice. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit that like button as well, leave me a comment, and hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. First on the docket, Chad DeBell's attorney makes his written argument as to why he believes that there should be a change of venue. So John Pryor, the attorney for Mr. Chad DeBell, has stated and had filed a very generic motion early on stating that he wanted a change of venue because there's been pretrial publicity. Well, he filed a brief and it basically says that the venue should be changed because a fair and impartial trial cannot be held in Fremont, Madison, or Bonneville counties. And his initial brief goes on to basically say that everyone is entitled under the United States as well as the Idaho Constitution to an impartial jury trial. It's guaranteed by the 6th and 14th Amendments to the United States Constitution as well as the applicable sections of the Idaho Constitution. Now, there's some little bit of law cited in here which kind of sets the standard, and you really have to look at each case on a case-by-case basis. However, when you get to the meat of the argument, a lot of it is there's so much speculation going on about this case. And he basically says, hey, the DA could clear all this up if they would just release some information. So let's talk about it. To support this assertion regarding a change of venue, he says that there is inadmissible and inflammatory evidence that has been an overwhelming amount of it reported as it relates to Ms. Vallow's activities in Arizona prior to any relationship with Mr. DeBell. Articles and audio recordings of Ms. Vallow's insinuating her right to cause harm to her third husband, a video recording of a material witness expressing her view on the case, additional inflammatory and untruthful information that has been reported by local media insinuating that Mr. DeBell had some role in his wife Tammy DeBell's death. Mr. Pryor states in his brief that it is the prosecutor who continues to allow this inaccurate information to continue by not providing the autopsy results performed on Tammy DeBell, despite it having been performed a significant time ago. The advancement of this narrative in a small population area only continues to taint the jury pool, according to Mr. Pryor. Mr. Pryor goes on to state that he has not granted any public interviews related to this case, has not given any statements to the press for publication. He then states that rather, counsel for Mr. DeBell has purposely and intentionally kept quiet even when the media continues to report facts that the defense takes issues with. The prosecution through the county has employed a public relations firm to handle all media requests and comments directed to the county. Information to defense counsel suggests they are trying to advance their own narrative of the case. The special prosecution, Fremont and Madison County officials allowed ribbons to be placed and ribbons posted upon the courthouse and government property until Mr. Pryor brought it to the magistrate court's attention, at which time they were suddenly removed and the public relations firm was retained. Mr. Pryor goes on to state that the communities in Fremont, Madison, and Bonneville counties are predominantly Latter-day Saints communities, and although religion in no way qualifies anyone to serve on any case, at the direction of the, and I'm not sure what this is, a stake, S-T-A-K-E, president in Henry's Fork, Mr. Daybell's sister sent a mass email to all the ladies within the Henry's Fork stake, only causing greater concern that any potential jury pool would be tainted. There was a request of the Henry's stake president to Mr. Daybell's sister to communicate to all of the ladies within the stake regarding the facts as she sees them. It should be noted that in the discovery provided to the defense counsel at this point, it does not show that Mr. Daybell's sister had any personal information or involvement in this case. Rather, it's been suggested to the defense counsel, Mr. Pryor states in his brief, that through investigation, that he is related through marriage to law enforcement who may have had an investigation role in this case. This, of course, causes great concern to Mr. Pryor and states that her assertions in her email to all of the ladies of the Henry's Fork stake that she has personal knowledge of the facts. Now, although defense counsel has no evidence, is what Mr. Pryor states, he says he has no evidence provided by the prosecution that Mr. Daybell's sister has information or evidence in this case. There is no information regarding her connections through marriage to law enforcement. He further states that he has no direct information that anyone in law enforcement has spoken to Mr. Daybell's sister. Mr. Pryor has great concern that law enforcement in this case is speaking or has continued to speak to members in the community about the facts of the case. He further states that the continued untruths that somehow Mr. Daybell is involved in some sort of cult activity continues to be presented to the local community. Although there is significant reference to the LDS scriptures and religion, the suggestion of cult activities is continually being advanced without any merit. The survey presented to the court, performed by defense counsel and provided as an exhibit, supports the assertion that a fair trial cannot be had in the 7th Judicial District. It shows that not only was the person who was conducting the survey received threats from Bonneville, Madison, and Fremont counties, that the vast majority of the people interviewed stated that they have already made up their mind regarding the guilt of the defendants. Further, the vast majority would not change their mind, basically, if they were to hear new evidence. Now, Mr. Pryor then goes on to take some shots at the East Idaho News, who he describes as the dominant and expansive newspaper with readership within all of the 7th Judicial District, has on almost a daily basis reported on information regarding this case. It's published interviews with material witnesses to the case, published numerous pictures of the location where the bodies were discovered, photos of the courthouse laced with ribbons and pictures, and Mr. Pryor has also submitted photos of businesses and places within the 7th Judicial District expressing their opinion on the case. Now, considering the pretrial publicity and the strong feelings in the community, Mr. Pryor believes that the court should take the appropriate steps to protect Mr. Daybell's right to an impartial jury, in addition to moving venue to a larger population within the state. He further requests that a jury questionnaire be submitted so that we can inquire of who of any potential jurors had been exposed to pretrial publicity. So Mr. Pryor's brief kind of lays out what you have to be able to show on a change of venue. Now, I wish we could see the actual report based upon the survey of people that were interviewed within the counties and that are referenced in the brief. That is going to be the most telling. What was the population polled? How many had already formed their opinions and if they're not going to change their minds. The issue the court's going to have to decide is, will this affect a fair trial for Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow? What it boils down to is, unless the court is so convinced by the survey that was conducted on behalf of the defense, the judge may just wait to see what the potential jurors say in voir dire, which is the jury selection process. Certainly in those counties, they're going to have people that have heard about the case. There may be people that have read every piece of news out there about the case. The reality of it is, though, it doesn't mean that you can't get a fair and impartial trial. I had a very similar case, involved the death of two small children in a case. It was very widely published, and the county in which we were in, the court moved, changed the venue, but she kept it within her judicial district. And in that judicial district, we were able to bring in hundreds and hundreds of jurors. And guess what? We were able to find 12 plus three alternates who had never heard anything about the case, who said that they could listen to the evidence and reserve judgment until they hear all the evidence and then be given the law by the court. So it's possible. The court in this particular situation is going to have to make its own call. The judge is going to live in this jurisdiction. He is going to know and have the best feeling as to what's taking place. And if he truly believes you're just not going to get a fair trial, he should just move it. Don't delay it. Just do it. Now, one of the other points that I want to comment on that John Pryor made in his brief is that the district attorney has the autopsy result as it relates to Tammy Daybell, Chad Daybell's wife, who passed away, and then he just happened to marry Lori Vallow 2 weeks later and then go off to Hawaii. If the prosecutor has that report, he has a duty, in my humble opinion, to release it. But to manipulate the situation and try to create that Lori Vallow is some black widow as it relates to the death of her previous husband, or even as it relates to Tammy Daybell, he should release it. The public is entitled to the facts. We're all big boys and girls. We should be entitled to see what's taking place. If there's going to be an investigation, it can be done. If you're going to charge somebody, charge them, but don't manipulate the public. Don't try to manipulate the system. Release the autopsy result. Let me know what you think. Do you think John Pryor has made a good enough case for a change of venue? And do you think the district attorney should release the autopsy for Tammy Daybell if he has it? I say yes. Let me know what you think in the comments below. Before we go on to our next story, please go to crimetalksearch.com. You can sign up for a background subscription service where you can anonymously search whomever you desire. And in that report that is going to search literally millions of public records around the entire United States, you'll get a report that'll have information regarding the person that you're searching, their social media presence, their emails, their phone numbers, criminal history, property records, divorce records, civil judgments, things that you need to know about people, things that you want to know about people, particularly if you're going to get involved with them. So please go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up today. Next on the docket, someone should have run a background search on this guy, because guess what? If he actually did what he is accused of doing, that's right, he could be a serial killer. Now, the suspected serial killer is accused of killing 14 elderly North Texas residents, and he's been indicted for three more deaths this week, and authorities say he's been linked to another seven deaths. This gentleman's name, and I know somebody will say, Scott, why'd you use the word gentleman? Well, we're just being polite, and guess what? Everyone's given the presumption of innocence. Well, Billy Chemermere, all right, he's 48, and he has been charged with 17 counts of capital murder and two counts of attempted capital murder in two North Texas counties. Chemermere allegedly posed as a home health care worker or maintenance worker to gain access to the entry of the victims' homes before smothering and robbing them of jewelry, cash, and other items. And most of the attacks took place in a senior living facility. Chemermere's arrest came after an attack on a woman on March 19th of 2018, when a 91-year-old Plano woman said a man forced his way into her apartment at Preston Place Retirement Community, telling her, "Go to bed. Don't fight me." She said he put a pillow over her face until she lost consciousness. A friend found her and called 911. This woman provided a description of her attacker, and police identified Chemermere. The next day, the police arrested Chemermere at his Plano apartment on outstanding warrants and retrieved a jewelry box from a dumpster where he had tossed it. The box had the name of Lou Thee Harris, an 81-year-old woman who lived in Dallas. Dallas police found Harris's body in her bedroom. Her son identified the jewelry box and a set of keys found in Chemermere's car as his mother's. Indictment of those attacks and 11 other deaths came down by summer of 2019, and in February of 2020, two more murder indictments were handed down. Chemermere, who maintains his innocence, has been charged with killing Phyllis Payne, Phoebe Perry, Joyce Aberwitz, Juanita Purdy, Lee Corkin, Margaret White, Norma French, Doris Gleason, Minnie Campbell, Doris Wasserman, Carolyn McPhee, Rosemary Curtis, Mary Brooks, Martha Williams, Miriam Nelson, Ann Conklin, and Lou Thee Harris, the youngest being 81, the oldest being 94. So, Mr. Chemermere, obviously we'll give you the presumption of innocence, but if you, in fact, did this, yes, you are a serial killer and deserve to go to prison, if not possibly receiving the ultimate punishment. Now, next on the docket, a police officer begs a man to comply. This happened Tuesday night in Hillsborough County, Florida. The officer was trying to serve an arrest warrant on Dylan Scott in a McDonald's parking lot. Scott was wanted on charges of grand theft and resisting arrest. The officer asked Scott to put his hands up, but he refused. The cop begs Scott, telling him, "I don't want to do this. It's not worth it." As Scott remains steadfastly uncooperative, the officer tells him if he makes a bad decision, it could cost him his life. But still, Scott refuses to cooperate. The officer pled with Scott for another 4 minutes to no avail. He begs Scott to put his hands up, repeatedly saying he doesn't want to do this. It then gets even more tense when the cop apparently sees Scott reaching for something. He begs for him not to and says, "Whatever you've got in your hands, drop it." Scott still refuses, and the officer tells a fellow cop Scott has a gun. You then hear a series of gunshots. Unfortunately, no gun was found in the car. And I say unfortunately for the officer. I think he will have trouble with that, regardless of the fact that it was justified. Scott was ultimately taken to the hospital where he died. Scott's mother called the sheriff's office in July, saying that her son left a note that he wanted to die by suicide. Now, we put up a quick screenshot here. We're going to put up the video separately, and if you'd like to watch that, you can do so. Warning, it could be upsetting to some people. Next on the docket, the dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Mr. Prince Carter. He was on a break from his Santa duties Monday evening at the Connecticut Post Mall when he hugged and grabbed the female victim in a break room, where Carter also allegedly exposed himself to the juvenile. Now, responding to the 911 call about a possible sexual assault, the police arrived and subsequently arrested Carter on risk of injury to a minor and sexual assault charges. Mr. Carter was booked into jail and later freed on a $25,000 bond. Now, Mr. Carter, seen here in his Santa suit, apparently it was the same suit that he apparently grabbed the juvenile and then exposed himself. I want to know, is there nothing sacred out there? I mean, really? Sexual assaults from Santa Claus? My goodness. Better leave Santa some extra milk and cookies this year so he doesn't go poking around the bedroom, I guess. Needless to say, Mr. Carter is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Mr. Carter, if you are the winner after tomorrow's contestant is announced, you will receive a Crime Talk mug at no expense to you. And look, this one even matches your Santa suit, and you can do whatever you desire with the mug if you win, Mr. Carter. Now, don't forget, Christmas is coming. If you want a Crime Talk mug, hit the link below, order it so that you can get it today. Thanks for watching. We won't be so casual attire tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.